create this stair step to value those folks who are profitable beyond industry average, when they can find ways to add some value and some valuable management to those basic elements, and the folks who really thrive in this business reach up into that pinnacle of what we call best performance. But it starts from the bottom up. We asked a whole number of people. Our survey request was to about 250 folks. We got 217 responses, 130 producers, and 87 specialists, those folks who from the financial, technical, pharmacological, veterinary, nutritional, consulting areas interact with cow-calf producers. Our cow-calf producer demographics were about 22% owners or part owners, 62% who had a position as owners and managers, and 16% who managed enterprises but did not have an ownership role. Equal distribution of herds less than 200 cows, 200 to 499 on up to more than 1,000 cows. We targeted this survey to larger producers. 13% of our respondents were less than 40 years of age, two-thirds of them 40 to 59 years of age, and about 20% 60 years or older. So we thought we got a pretty good demographic in the industry. From a numbers standpoint, about 23% of our producers out of the Midwest, 10% from the Northwest, 28% from the Southeast, 30% from the South Plains, and 9% from the Southwest, relatively close to the cow distribution that you saw earlier from Randy. We did ask people about their marketing, and this is something that we found interesting and I think that is worth noting from the study. The average producer respondent sold about a third of their calves at wean, about a third as yearlings, and about a third as fed cattle. In other words, they were spreading risk and looking for opportunities to add value to the right cattle at the right times in the right markets. They weren't an all-in, all-out deal. It wasn't all the eggs in one basket kind of an approach. About a third sold 50% or more of their calves at weaning. About a third sold 50% or more of their calves as yearlings. And about 42%, interesting to us, sold 50% or more of their calves as fed cattle. What that told us was that the cow-calf producers that we surveyed who were being successful, who we interpreted as highly profitable enterprises, were in fact participating in the supply chain, and they were trying to capture the value in their cattle down the line. Now, you've heard a lot of information this morning that suggests there's going to be some pressure backwards against our desire maybe to participate in that value capture given the price corn and the risk of owning cattle further into the supply chain. The thing I would suggest to all of us, though, is that as we look at this next couple of years of high volatility and some uncertainty, that we not give up our commitment to value and quality in this industry that built consumer demand, that has set us up for the future to be profitable so that we can pass on our assets and our land to our children. We must not falter in that approach to provide the best product in the world to consumers. And so the marketing focus is going to be incredibly important for us. We literally ask people to prioritize into kind of three basic buckets: high priority, medium priority, and low priority. In other words, the high priority items, we have to do this. For us to stay in business, we've got to get this done. Then it was kind of the, boy, it's sure great if we can get to this kind of category. And then it was the, man, if there's any time left or any money left or mom will let loose of any of the checkbook, we try to get these things done. So it's kind of high, medium, and low. And when we put all of it together, the specialist responses, the cow-calf producer responses, combined those, we kind of got our magnificent seven, which was led with herd nutrition. Nearly scored a nine. That was the highest priority from this survey. That was not surprising to us at all. And right behind it, pasture and range, which told us that producers and their advisors were trying to figure out ways to move out of expensive purchased feed inputs from a mainstream approach, move to pasture and range, and then use those purchased inputs as critical, precision-driven, supportive elements as opposed to mainstream elements of the ration. We think about a what you saw in terms of the increase in land value. Clearly, the cow-calf business in this country is going to be pushed to more marginal acres, and we're going to have to do more and more on traditional pasture and range settings. Herd health came in a very close third, and really, when you look at these top seven, I don't know that it really matters which one is one. These are the things that people are focusing on. Herd health sits right behind it. Financial management and marketing hand-in-hand right behind that. Production management with a large focus on reproductive management right behind that. And then genetics. Interestingly enough, labor sat in at eighth in this region of the country. On up into the Northwest, though, we saw labor jump two or three spots as labor availability clearly is a higher concern for producers in the Northwest than any other region of the country. We thought that was an interesting result as well. Now, very clearly, when we combined across all regions, producers and the specialists did not align perfectly, but they were relatively close throughout these. I just want to show this to you to let you know there was some difference, and there were some regional differences that we can talk about after this is over. You can get a copy of this full report either off the website for the American Angus Association. Just Google for priorities first and you'll find that, or you can certainly email us and we'll get that to you. But folks spent less energy down here worrying about harvested forage and supplemental feed. They were beginning to deprioritize this. Some of the things like biosecurity and quality assurance were not considered unimportant. They were simply things that got less of the time and energy from producers who made sure that nutrition, pasture management, herd health, financial management, marketing, etc. were taken care of first. And it gives us some idea about the way that producers prioritize their time and their energy. I want to finish with just a quick look at the marketing subcategories that we observed from this survey. Marketing the calf crop was the highest priority item. That was where people focused their highest degree of energy. But right behind it was choosing the appropriate market channel and choosing the right channel for the right cattle. And we interpret that as the steer mates to the replacement heifers likely went one way, the terminal cross cattle went another, and that there was a very high degree of energy put into selecting the right cattle to go into the right channels. Marketing cull cows, relatively high, and Gary Smith, that will make you happy to know that the national non-fed audits resonate with people because they recognize the profit opportunity of managing and marketing cull cows and cull bulls appropriately, and then also those replacement females as people mitigate their herd inventory relative to pasture conditions and profit opportunities. The reality is this, is that you're going to hear a lot in the next few days about what you should do. This is a complex time. It's a chaotic time, but it's also a time that will resonate with opportunity for those producers who keep their priorities first and who have the courage and the vision to manage with precision and to seek those opportunities even in changing times. I want to turn it back over now to Duane, who will take you through some more information about structural changes in our business. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. How's everybody doing? I guess I would argue a little bit with Tom about not having anybody hung over in the room. I would venture to guess we probably got at least one or two that probably had a pretty good time last night. Of course, that's what we're here in Reno to do. I'm going to take the program and start to wind down towards the end. We're going to start talking about some of the changes going on in the beef industry, what that's going to mean for some opportunity out there for everybody, and some of the things that you can do to help manage in this challenging and in this changing time. And there are some things that can be done. If we just take a look and start where the feed yards, the big feed yards is, and this is feed yards over 16,000 head. You can draw a box there going from Nebraska down into Colorado, Kansas, and then down into about the Lubbock, Texas area of the Panhandle. As Randy mentioned earlier, about 75% of all the cattle are fed in that box. the other 25% are scattered out, some in the west, some in the Iowa, Illinois region. Now, is this box changing? Is it doing something different? The big talk with all the ethanol going on, we're going to shift all this feeding into the north. Well, there's probably some validity to that. We are probably going to shift some of it north into Nebraska. Can we shift it east into Iowa, though? That's probably going to be a real big challenge, just given some of the environmental concerns that we have in the Midwest. We can take some of those cattle from the bottom end of the panhandle and change those into, especially the central and western Nebraska. In fact, we've seen some of that happen over the last year or two. But there's probably not going to be a big shift in this feeding area and what we do as far as feeding cattle in an area. So that leaves, there's about 50% of the cow herd in that area. That leaves the 25% in the southeast, the 10% in the west. Everybody's got to funnel into that. You can lay the major packers over that same area and find that that's where most of the packers are located as well. The industry is kind of going to that. We've got to figure out a way. Mike Murphy spent some time talking about the costs that are involved and have grown in getting cattle into that area. That's something we have to manage around. Anytime you can leave cattle in the same region to feed and to be processed, that saves costs for the industry. But that's been very, very difficult to do in these changing times and the higher fuel costs especially. So we're probably going to have to continue to look there. If you look at these 16,000 head yards or bigger, there's about 72% of all the cattle that are fed in feed yards of that size. If you really look at the decision makers, of the 16,000 yards, that represents about 250 yards. And of course, some of those are multiple ownership yards. One yard might have 3, 4, 5 yards. So looking at the decision makers, and what's going on is constantly changing. If you go back in time, there used to be feed yards scattered through the Midwest, more feed yards in the West, but that's changing. The marketplace is shifting. We're going to talk about what happened in the western U.S. quite a bit here in a minute. I went back and I looked at what happened. I thought, boy, those guys, they lost a lot of markets. But they didn't lose their markets. Their markets shifted on them. And that's what we see every day in the industry is how the marketplace are shifting and how do we manage that? How do we control that? Because usually when markets shift, it adds cost to us. And that's something we're going to focus on. Beef cow operations, you can see how the number of beef cow operations have dropped over time. It's a substantial drop going back from 1980 to the current time, 1.2 million to where we sit just under 800,000 right now. Randy outlined a lot of the reasons why. It's an older population. There's things we can do with this land. We can go in the southeast, put the trees on that land. In the south, you can lease it out for hunting. In the northwest and west, we have people coming in to buy land to do other things rather than renting cows on it. May or may not be profitable, and a lot of those folks don't care, but it still changes. The other thing that we see is, especially when folks get older, they want to retire, they want to do something different. Obviously, the kids, my generation and younger, have other careers and really not interested in moving back and taking over that operation. So it ends up getting sold to a neighbor. Neighbors like that. Neighbors know who their neighbors are then. So they're more willing all the time to absorb that piece of land next door and grow that operation. Is this trend done? Have we seen this trend come to a bottom? I guess I would argue not. I think we're going to see that trend continue over time. When neighbors take on neighbors' land and add to that, though, we start seeing more cows in less hands. And this is a graph that illustrates that real well. It's percent of U.S. cows and herd with more than 100 cows. That's a big increase. Gone from less than half to more than half. Again, we'd argue that this is probably going to be a trend that continues over time. We're going to see fewer cows, or we're going to see more cows in fewer hands. And that's going to create extreme opportunity for those folks that are left in the industry that are ready to manage and be in that group. There's going to be fewer of us all the time, but we're going to be better operators. This is a slide that kind of encapsulates a little bit of what we talked about. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because we talked about it. The first line, though, I think numbers of operations with less than 99 cows, operations declined 20% in this period of time. Now, if you see anything in our cattle industry, in the beef industry, that changes 20% in that period of time, that's significant. We're a fairly unwieldy industry, aren't we? So to see that quick of a shift, that big of a shift, in that quick of a time, makes you sit up and pay attention. Again, that's something that we probably see going to continue. The percentage of beef cows in operations declined from 52 to 46, going less. The number of operations with more than 100 cows increased 9%. Again, a very, very, very large increase in an industry like ours that is known for moving very, pretty slowly over time. The percentage of beef cows has grown. They've taken that over. I never thought, I came to Califax in the late 80s, I never thought I'd see the day where that increase would go into these bigger operations. I want to spend a little bit of time on this last one. 15% of the cows are in herds greater than 500 head as of last year. Now, there's about 800,000 operations out there, according to the last census data. In this group, 500 head and bigger, there's about 5,500 operators. It's a fairly small group. When you see all the people here in Reno, and it's my understanding that the pre-registration registration is large, you take 5,500, there's a lot of new folks in this room and in this convention this week. You start taking that group of decision makers, though, and you can see it's the same as we keep talking about. That group of decision makers are getting smaller all the time. But they're better operators, they're more savvy, they're more willing to listen to what's going on. They know that we're in a changing time and a changing environment, and they want to be here and they want to figure it out. And that is what we're doing, that's what we're going to be doing over the course of this next week. It's a very, very challenging, very, very changing environment. We're in the West, and we wanted to spend a few minutes. The West has gone through extreme changes here, really, in the last 20 years. The folks in the West have been extremely innovative over time. It's not because they wanted to, it's because it's been forced upon them. The marketplace has changed, it has shifted, it has moved time after time after time, and in order to survive, and those folks that are here and have survived, we're more than willing to make these changes and keep looking forward and continue to do that. If you look at just the percent of cattle, here's what we talked about. 4% Northwest, 4% Southwest. We talked about John Wayne country, all the big ranch country. You go down there, and a lot of you folks are here from the Southeast. You go give a talk, and you show this back to them, they're just amazed. They would guess that 50% of all the cows are in the Western U.S. Well, heck, the Southeast outpaces them by a long ways. It's a fairly, fairly small, but a real vital part of our industry. We've had so many decision makers come out of the West. It's been amazing over time. If you look at what's happened to the beef cow side, we talked about it here a couple slides ago. You can see in the Southeast that herd size has been pretty flat. We've had a big increase in the North Plains. The South Plains, amazingly, has been pretty flat. But in the West, the Northwest has gone from the average cow herd in 1986 from 33 to currently at 48. That's a big increase, again, in a short period of time. The Southwest the same way. That average cow herd has increased by 15 head per herd. And again, that's a big, big shift over time. So again, there are going to be fewer operators in the West, and they're getting to control more of the cows. The big difference here especially, too, is we see the cattle on feed. The Northwest has always been a pretty good balance. But in the Southwest, we've gone from, as a percent of cattle on feed, of 12% back in the 70s to currently 6%. So what happened? What changed? What moved? What shifted? It's just a fascinating story. A lot of people will tell you that the birthplace of cattle feeding is in the Southwest. It's actually in the Imperial Valley of California and in southern Arizona. And this has happened in the late 60s, mid to late 60s, when this industry was really starting to go. We certainly have some feed yards in the Midwest, and that was starting to go. But the big, large commercial feed yards, a lot of people will tell you, happened in this country. They had great weather. They had a lot of feed aftermath. They had a lot of things to feed the cattle. We used to haul cattle calves from the Southeast into the Southwest to feed, because they had the idea and they had the facilities. So with all these cattle, it was kind of the birthplace and where we went. Heck, man, I'm still here. I thought I was going, getting ahead of myself. But all these things started to move. What happened? Well, in the late 70s, mid to late 70s, there's companies like IBP, Iowa Beef Producers, came up and they started building big plants in the Midwest. And they started running thousands of head of cattle through there every day. If you look back in the Southwest at that time, especially an area like L.A., L.A. had up to 20 packers in the 70s at one point in time, just that area. But they're all small packers. You know, if they run 1,000 head a day, they were pretty good sized. What would they do coming back? How did they sell the meat? Either in a carcass or in a half a carcass. Somebody would pull that van up to the back door, and they'd throw in a side of beef, and away you went. And everything, you know. That side of beef, then they would get into a butcher shop somewhere or to a store somewhere, and they would cut it. It's in the day, and I think a lot of us long for that day when somebody would come in and they'd cut you off steak or roast. But then all of a sudden, these packers in the Midwest began doing something even different than that. What is it that they did that revolutionized the whole industry? Put it in a box. Who'd have thunk it? The guys in the Southwest and in L.A. said, I don't know. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have to add. We're getting along just fine. What they found out, though, is that the guys in the Midwest in a big mass production system could do it cheaper. They started calling their customers, and they said, do you want a whole carcass? And they said, well, that's